Hey guys, welcome back to the Design for More podcast. My name's Pastor Chad Harold, and I am thrilled you're joining us today. Now, as we continue this study on brain science in the Bible, we are looking particularly at the different ways that God has wired us and designed us so that we can best be used by Him to build His kingdom. It's all about figuring out and understanding that you and I were designed for far more than we think we are. So I hope you'll get excited. I hope you'll enjoy this message. I hope it's practical. I hope it's helpful. And I hope you'll continue to share what's happening here with those around you in hopes that it might too help them. So let's get ready for another exciting message. Here we go.
So I don't know about you guys, but it's been, I think I've said this a few times, but you know, at my core, I'm a Bible teacher. That's just what I do. It's what I love to do. And so this has been a fun, unique time to not necessarily say we pulled away from the Bible, but to dig into a topic that really has everything to do with God, but is looking at ourselves in a different perspective. It's been a very unique experience. So I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have, but it has been different. And there's been some moments where I just kind of want to start teaching. And anyways, it's all good. I contained myself many times. So, all right, so let's begin. I would think it's safe to say that most of us, if not all of us, all hope to be the best versions of ourselves at some point in our life. Is that a fair statement? All of us want to be the best version of ourselves, right? If God designed me for more, God created me for a purpose with a passion, I hope we'd want to be the best version of ourselves. But a lot of times what happens is we don't always know how to do it. And so what we've been doing at this season of this class has been using the Enneagram to take a look at ourselves, to look at our personality, and also to see the different ways that we, if you will, bend. And one of the things I want to tell you slash remind you is that the Enneagram has really been developed. You developed your Enneagram number, if you will, while you were growing up. A lot of what we see come out in these tests, this Enneagram test and how we're unpacking it, really was developed in your childhood for the most part. So as you were growing up, traumatic experiences that you had, situations, environments, people that were around you, this is a lot of how your number, if you will, is shaped. Now, we identified that a lot of this is God-given, that God drives us into different personalities so that we can be effective, not individually, but as a team, right? God desires unity. But at the same time, how we grow up and the experiences we have played a massive effect in the person that you and I have become. And our Enneagram represents that. In fact, most people that study the Enneagram feel like the Enneagram numbers that you have are really more of a safety mechanism that is a response to how you grew up. So how you navigated the world when you were a kid, when you were a teenager, the things you experienced, the Enneagram is your response to how you see the world and how you navigate through it. Okay, so if you are a challenger like myself, there's a really good chance your childhood had a lot to do with that. So I was thinking about that this week. So as I was thinking about that, I was like, that's kind of cool, powerful, and kind of scary that my childhood, that for the most part, as a kid, we don't really have as much control over our childhood. So I'm an eight, right? I'm a challenger. My growing up, I grew up in a divorced home. I grew up the oldest of three. I grew up with my mom raising me, not my dad. I'm grateful that my dad is back in the picture now, but during the majority of my life, I was kind of on my own. And so by default, I look at my life and I go, well, that actually kind of makes a lot of sense because I like to push back on the system because I did a lot of things in my life on my own. I had to learn on my own. I had to learn how to grow up. I had to learn how to be a man. I had to learn how to shave. And I was pretty bad at it when I got started, right? I mean, there were a couple cuts and scrapes, and I go, man, I wish someone would show me what to do here because I'm holding this thing upside down. I'm not quite sure which direction I'm even supposed to go, and what's that cream stuff, right? There were so many things that I had to kind of learn, navigate on my own, but it shaped me into who I was. In fact, I remember a couple years ago, I was up here. Do y'all remember, anybody know Mark Poe? Anybody remember Mark Poe? Mark Poe was here for a long time on our staff. He's at another campus now. But he was my boss at the time. And one day he was just in a bad mood. Don't tell him I said this, Bob. He was just in a bad mood. And he goes, I don't understand why you always just go do whatever you want and you never tell me what you're doing. And now this isn't in like, where I am during the day kind of thing. It was in programming events, ideas. Like I was a little crazy. I was just going for it. And he'll catch up later. I'm off, you know. And and I looked at him and I said a really profound thing that I had no clue I was saying. It's just one of those moments that just came out. And I go, it's probably because my parents were divorced and I had to raise myself on my own. And we both like paused for a minute and he looked at me and he goes, ha, that's kind of interesting. That makes a lot of sense. You basically run from authority, and it makes sense because you really didn't have much authority when you were growing up. You had to learn how to generate on your own. So the challenger in me most likely comes a lot from as I was growing up. So as I explained that story to you, maybe it's starting to click for you as well. As you think about your number and you think about some of those characteristics, you can maybe think about in your life things that were happening. And it doesn't always have to be bad. Sometimes it's good. Maybe you had a great environment with a bunch of encouragers, and it was a safe and a loving family environment. And so by default, you lean more into that emotional side of the triad of the brain, if you will. So we're beginning to see that all of this is coming together, and it's important we see that. Why? Because we want to know our strengths, but we also want to know our weaknesses. We want to know how God has wired us, and we want to know if there have been problems in our life, traumatic things in our life that we experience. It's very important that we cover that. And just as a little side trail for a moment, when it comes to mental health, which has finally become a thing that is acceptable to talk about, which hasn't always been the case in the last, you know, couple of decades, what we're realizing is that there's a lot of people that have what we would call mental health issues. A lot of it comes from childhood, but not all of it. And it's important that we understand that. In fact, for those of you that have that either are men in your 30s or kids, maybe nieces, nephews, whatever, in their 30s, know that it is men in their 30s is typically when the trauma from their childhood comes to life. Mid-30s is typically when men are starting to have these we'll just call it outbursts for lack of a better word, but it comes out about that time, even though these things happened to them when they were possibly 3, 4, 5, 6 years old. And so a lot of this is understanding us, maybe even catching some of our problems before they become real problems. So the Enneagram helps us get such a wonderful perspective. And I know you know that, but I just like to remind you why we're doing what we're doing. Okay, now last week, what did we talk about? Who wants to tell me? Can you remember? Bible study this Sunday. Don't forget. Mental note. All right. The three what? All right. I like where we're headed. Okay, now remember what we say. What's the myth? Yeah, left brain, right brain, not exactly as they always said. But nonetheless, for lack of a better picture, we'll draw a peace sign here to create our brain. So this is our brain as a whole. Okay, it doesn't look anything like that, at least that we know of. And then we could see that our brain's broken up into three categories. Anybody remember what the categories are? Brainstem. Where's the brainstem? Yeah, very good. Brainstem is here. All right, what else? Right hemisphere, very good. And then we have our left hem. All right, now, what I want to do today, just as a part of a recap of that, is to share with you a couple more points of information that are interesting, not necessarily important, but interesting. So this is what they call, if you ever are talking with someone about Enneagram and they go, well, what about the triad? Which triad are you in? This is what they're referring to. Well, I told you at the very beginning, one of the things that I wasn't the biggest fan of Enneagram is how complex it can be. It is great to have complex information, but sometimes it's just confusing to follow. So you hear triads and then you hear wings and then you hear numbers and you hear all these things. You're just like, I am so confused. Whenever they say, what triad are you in? This is what they're talking about, right, left, and then the brainstem. So we remembered that in each of the three categories, there were three numbers. So let's start with the brainstem. The brainstem, we put it in one word, and it was instinct. It's driven out of instinct, okay? Now, in that category of instinct, we had three numbers. Which ones were they? Hopefully you remember. 8, 9, and 1. Now, this triad of the brain, the instinct brain stem. Okay, couple of characteristics about it. First of all, you can think of the three triads as gut, head, heart. Gut, head, heart. So which one, gut, head, heart, do you think represents the instinct, the brain stem? Gut, very good. That's the gut triad of your brain. I keep grabbing my chest, so it's nothing to do with that. It's your brain. The gut triad of your brain. Now, if you were to look at the triads in a body, soul, And body, soul, and mind, which of those three would be the instinct? Body, very good, right? Because we're reacting, right? It comes from our instinct. The brainstem control, the brainstem is connected closely to the body, navigates from there. So it is our gut triad. It represents the body element of us. It also represents, out of mental, emotional, and physical health, it represents the physical health area of our body, right? It is connected to the physical. On a spiritual level, of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, which one do you think would be in the instinct category? Father. Wrong. Gosh, I love it when people are wrong. Who do you think it is? Wrong. Who do you think it is? I don't know how to help you if you don't know this now. Yes, this is the Son. This is where Jesus originates, right? You'll see the bigger picture when we're done, okay? Also in this, we have, this is where action comes from, action, okay? So now let's look at the right brain. The right brain was another word. Anybody remember what it was? We had instinct and we had
intuition.
Very good. Some of you kept your notes. I appreciate that. Intuition comes from our right hemisphere. Couple of elements about the right hemisphere. It's not the gut, it's the heart. Very good. Y'all are so smart. This is the heart triad. Of the body, mind, and soul, it is the soul element. It is where our emotional health resonates. It's where of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. The what is here? The Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit. Intuition, not intellect, right? Intuition. That's where the Holy Spirit resonates. It is more feminine than it is masculine. And it is more about feelings than it is about actions or thoughts. So remember, think of it like this. We have our actions, our feelings, and our thoughts. We have our body, our soul, and our mind. We have our gut, our heart, and our head triad. Begin to see how these work. Okay? So, looking finally at the last piece. Oh, and what numbers are in this one?
Two, three, and four.
And then our final piece on our left hemisphere of our brain is our, I already told you, our intellect. Ooh, spelled it wrong. That's not where my number lies. By the way, I did a presentation yesterday for Chick-fil-A. I was training some members and some operators, and I was using the animal personality profile. And I'm telling you what, it was one of the hardest things I've ever done because I couldn't stop talking about this. It kept overlapping, and it was so confusing. It was very frustrating. Anyways, that was just a side note. I vented, and I'm done. All right, so over here we have the intellect. So we have our intellect, our intuition, and our instinct. What numbers are in the intellect category? 5, 6, and 7. So of the mind, heart, and head, what do you think it is? It is the head. Comes from our mind, our mental health. And this is where God the Father would be described as. This is more masculine, and this is where our thoughts originate. Now, that was ultimately a review of what we talked about last week, but it helps you remember the perspective that we're looking at. What we see in Enneagram is that it's a very complex element, which is really cool, right? That's super cool because your brain is complex. That means that you are complex. If anyone ever told you that you are not smart, they're lying to you. Now, you may not be smarter than everybody else. That's a different conversation for another day. But you are smart because God has designed you not only for more, but God has wired in you an unbelievable wealth of intricacies and information, of emotion and intellect and instinct. And you remember, we spent a lot of time last week breaking down instinct because it's the most natural of the three. In fact, oftentimes it happens before your brain can even process. This is all by God's design, and I think it's fascinating. Now, let's talk a little bit more about the brain-based Enneagram approach, okay? Now, remember, Enneagram is a very common thing. If you look carefully at our diagram here, you see that Enneagram is really these numbers on the outside. It's numbers 1 through 9. What we've been doing is looking at the Enneagram through the perspective of the brain, okay? What does that mean? Well, instead of just looking at the numbers that we are for what they are, we're trying to understand what is it in the brain that drives those things to be real. How does our brain function? How does our brain operate? And then connecting the dots between the brain and the numbers. Why is this important? Because it's one thing to know you have a tendency or a bent to act, behave, or respond a certain way. But to understand why gives us a wealth of information. on top of that, it helps you and I to develop into the complete person God desires for us to be. Now, pause for a minute. Remember, we live in a sinful, broken world and a sinful, broken system. Therefore, we'll never be fully complete. But that is not an excuse to not strive to be the full person God created you to be. Same thing in our obedience. We know that we're never going to be perfect, but it's not an excuse to say, well, I'm going to live and do whatever I want because who cares? I'm never going to be perfect. No, absolutely not. We're always striving to become the full person God created us to be, doing the very best we can in this sinful, broken world that we live in. And praise the Lord, one day is coming when Jesus will return. The horns will go and it will be a glorious day. Will it not? And you will be complete and you will be in your perfect. Okay. No more preaching. Let's get back to science. Okay, so that's what we're looking at. Now, one big thing. Remember, whenever you talk to people about Enneagram, they often point out the things that you are and eliminate the things that you are not. What we've been looking at is we want to not only understand how we're bent, we want to understand the things that we are not good at or that are not natural for us so that we can improve. Okay? Oftentimes, we look at our personality and go, oh yeah, that's totally me. I'm a lion. I'm a number eight. That's me. That's how I am. And so we rest in that. That's not the goal. The goal is to develop the areas that we lack so that we can be the complete person or close to the complete person God's called us to be. This is very, very important. The world we live in, we often rest in the easy and we avoid the difficult. It would be very easy to simply just rest in who you are. You're a challenger as well, right? Just be a challenger, challenge everything and be done. But that wouldn't be helpful because right now, if she were to challenge me, she'd be challenging the wrong person because I'm a challenger and I will always win. But more importantly, challenging everything doesn't help this world go around, right? We've got to have balance. Same thing on our spiritual gifts. If I were to say, well, I don't have the gift of evangelism, so I'm not going to worry about sharing the gospel. I have the gift of knowledge, so I'm just going to focus on studying the Bible. You would be 100% incorrect because the gospel very clearly, along with the Great Commission and many other passages from Scripture, tell you that's not true. Just because it's not the natural bent of your spiritual gifting does not mean you run from it. In fact, it's just a wonderful challenge for you to continue to develop. We see the world like this in our job. We see the world like this in our education. We even see the world like this possibly in our spiritual life. But we don't often think about that in our personality. And what we are discovering here is a very, very powerful thing for you to unpack and to develop. So the Enneagram approach, the brain-based Enneagram approach, is a little different from what you're noticing. It's about efficiency and inefficiency. Where am I efficient? Where am I not efficient? I am not an 8. I have high efficiency in 8. I am not always an 8, but I naturally lean into being an 8. Being an 8 for me, when it's your highest number, means it takes the least amount of energy and effort to display the characteristics of the 8. Does that make sense? It means I don't have to work at it. It's what comes out. Remember, this is a mechanism of how you grew up, mostly from trauma. So in your most stressful situations, your number typically comes out the most. Why? Because it's how you grew up. It's how you were raised. It is the safety mechanism that has been instilled in you because of the environment that you grew up in. So oftentimes, our efficiencies simply come because it's the easiest thing that will naturally flow out of us. This is why, for me being an 8, being a peacemaker is polar opposite for me, right? That's not a natural bent. It takes so much effort and work to be peaceful and compassionate. But does that mean I don't have to do it? No, absolutely not, right? It means that's the area that I'm going to have to put more energy and more work in. So when we look at it like this, it actually changes the way Enneagram has been approached. It's no longer about what you are and what you are not. It's really about where are you and what do you need to do to bring the rest of these to par? You're efficient here. You're inefficient here. How do we take your inefficiencies and make them efficient? That's the goal. We're self-developing as we grow closer to the Lord. Now, let's look at the wings, okay? So the wings are, I think, fun and complicated. When I say Enneagram wings, how many have any clue what I'm talking about? Raise your hand. 1, 2. Awesome. Okay, so maybe if you're talking with someone about Enneagram, they may go, well, I'm a 7W4. Ever heard that before? I'm a 7W4. Do you go, awesome. Is that a WD-40? I don't know about what. I have no clue what you're talking about, but that sounds real technical. And you go, oh, that's awesome. Well, First of all, if someone ever told you they were a 7W4, you can tell them, oh, that's wonderful. You should probably go back and learn a little bit about Enneagram, because that's not possible. All right? How do wings work? Wings are this. Where are my people that were fours? Raise your hand. Anybody, if you don't know, it's okay, no big deal. You can catch up later. Any fours in that nut? Where are my fives? Okay, five. All right. So, five. You have the ability to have two wings, 5W and a number. Your wings are on your right and on your left. So it would be your 6 and your 7. If you're an 8, like you, your wings would be a 9 or a... If you were a 4, your wing would be a 3 or a...
So those are like your lowest numbers?
Wait, let me finish.
Okay, sorry.
I want you to see the picture, okay?
Challenge.
Yes, challenge me one more time, and I will peacemaker you right out of this room. I'm just kidding. Let's look at it like this. I know this is hard to read because it's down here. Here's your 9. What are the two numbers next to it? The 1 and the 8. So whenever we say wing, what that means is of your highest efficient number, not that you're a 9, your highest efficiency, there are two numbers on the left and the right. These tell a little bit more about your personality. Now, in your wing, you will lean one way or the other. And I'm about to unpack all that for you. You're going to see it. It's going to be beautiful. Okay? If you're a 2, your wing is either a 3 or a 1. Okay? So understanding when someone says wing, what they're saying is those two numbers, one on the right, one on the left, which one is more like you? See, understanding your 9 plus your wing, your 8 plus your wing will help you understand a little bit more about your personality. And you go, well, that's a lot of information. I don't know how I could possibly keep up. Man, Chad, wouldn't it be awesome if you wrote all those on the board so we could totally understand exactly what you're talking about? Wow, that's amazing. Look at that. How great is this? All right. So check it out. I'm going to unpack for you the wings. Now, very important. The wing is not decided to you by a test. The wing is something that you see in yourself. You got that?
Okay.
The wing is not something decided by your test. The wing is something you see in yourself. So, if I were to ask you, is your wing a 9 or a 7? You would tell me, I'm not sure yet. The answer would be, I'm not sure yet.
I'm not sure yet.
Because I haven't told you what they mean.
Oh, okay.
Got it?
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? So as I describe to you what these wings sound like, you're going to listen to the one that best describes you. And what we've done is now we've taken, you're not just efficient in 8, but now we see another layer of your personality. Does this make sense? Does this make sense?
Yeah.
All right. So if you know your number, what you're going to be listening for is the first one that I call out. Now, on each of these, I'm going to give you a description so you can begin to listen and recognize. Now, if you've never taken an Enneagram test before, if you're here for the first time, no problem. What I want you to do is listen as I give these descriptions and make notes of the ones that sound like you. That will get you a little bit closer to where you are. Remember why we're doing this. We're trying to discover how God has wired us. He's designed us for more. We need to figure out some of those things that He has instilled deep down inside of us. So here we go. We're going to start from the top. If you were a number 1, okay? If you were a number 1, you're going to focus on these top two right here. Okay? So if you're a number 1 wing 9, you would be this. You would be the idealist. Here's some descriptions. Practical perfectionist. Introverted, excel at objective thinking, can neglect self, this is a challenge, and naturally diplomatic. Okay, so if you are a 1, do you lean more to that, the idealist, or do you lean more to this, the advocate, which goes like this: socially aware activist, more helpful and empathetic, action oriented, and tries to control everything. Which one of those two best describes you? If you are a 1, that's your wing. So from now on, whenever someone asks, hey, what's your Enneagram? You could say, I'm a 1 wing 9 or a 1 wing 2. Don't you feel empowered? Okay, let's talk to our 2s. Talk to our 2s for a minute. Let's start with 2 wing 1. This is the servant. Here's your description. Empathetic person that wants to make others happy, reasonable, and generous, but can be self-critical and is at risk for burnout because you're always trying to please others. Okay? On the other side, we have our host, 2 wing 3. outgoing and productive organizers, bring people together, charming and ambitious, tend to be competitive. So if you're a two, which one of those best describes you? You've now learned another layer about your personality. Yes, ma'am. Yes, you are right. Very good. There are some different words. Yeah, there's some different descriptions on different ones. You'll see some are the same, some are not. Disregard that. There are multiple words that people use. So one thing, I'm glad you asked that. So there's one thing you need to understand. Enneagram's been studied by probably a couple hundred people now. Written about, dissected, books about, all these different things. So people have used different words to translate different things, but the meaning or the heart of it is always the same. Does that answer your question? Well, no, because, okay, so there's another layer, though. So this description is describing your wing. See, you're now not just a two, you're a two wing. Which one described you better? Three or? You're not even that one. Okay, so when we get to yours, the one that best describes you, this is now describing your number and your wing, not just your number, right? So layer one is, what's your highest efficiency? I'm a 1 through 9, which one? Now we're looking at layer two, which is there's an element to this. There's a wing that takes it to another level. Got it? Cool? Okay, so let's move on to number three, okay? You're either going to be the star or you're going to be the professional. Three wing two sounds like this, the star. Socially savvy people who are interpersonal and charismatic. Life of the party, warm and encouraging. Now, some of you are like, I just want to be that. Can I change it? No. Don't fight the system. Embrace who you are. Okay? So if you're not the star, then you're the professional, which sounds a little bit like this. Driven and organized person, always with new ideas and projects in the works, tends to be more introverted and tend to be creative. Okay? These are your bents. Now, let's look at four. Four wing three, the aristocrat. Charismatic artists who value nature and beauty, more extroverted, competitive, and tend to put on a show. They tend to put on a show because they cover up their emotions or their hurt. Four wing five, the flip side, the bohemian. Intense creators who explore self-expression. By the way, if you're not bohemian, that's going to sound weird to you. But if you are, this makes total sense. Introverted, intellectual, and tend to withdraw from people. Okay? All right, let's keep going. A couple more. Five wing four, okay? The iconoclast. Lone rangers who value being self-taught. I love that characteristic. More creative and sensitive, tend to become an expert in one area. Now, on the other side, the problem solver. Five wing six. Detached researchers who love discovering new things. Extroverted, anxious, cautious, skeptic. Tend to be skeptical. All right, a couple more. Six. Is this helping? Got your number yet? Okay. Six wing five, the defender. Resourceful team players who value security and knowledge. Introverted, cautious, and can't stand confrontation. Okay. Six W7, the buddy. Six wing seven, optimistic explorers that love having fun, more extroverted, spontaneous, and tend to have a need for safety. What do you think? Sounding good? All right, three more. Seven wing six, the entertainer. Happy-go-lucky fun chasers seek new experiences and projects, loyal and endearing, but tend to exaggerate. That's also the description of an otter. Seven W8, the realist, innovative entrepreneurs and leaders love exploring and creating, free-spirited, intense, and tend to be passionate. All right, my eights. By the way, y'all can guess which one you think I am, 8W7 or an 8W9. 8W7 is the maverick, confident self-starters, enterprising and fearless, seek power, dream big, make logical decisions. Eight wing nine, the bear. Quietly strong leaders, strive to preserve harmony, care for others, people-oriented, and calm. I'm insulted by that. I am the most calm, caring, collective person. You're 100% right, the maverick. All right, nine, which one were you? Undecided.
I think I'm more than Maverick, but my problem is I can be a 1-2. I mean, it's like 98, 97.
Okay. So 9, wing 8. Last two. The comfort seeker. Independent individuals with calm mission to discover the world. Outgoing and assertive tend to be more individual. And 9, wing 1, the dreamer. Idealistic, romantics, introverted, value community and connection, seek routine and order. Okay. Now, by the way, I have all that in document, so I can send it to you later. But if I were to give it to you now, you'd just be reading it, not paying attention to what I have to say, so I didn't do that. Now, yes, sir. That's a great question. I didn't pay attention to that. I don't believe so. Because the way the numbers unpack, I don't think it would work that way. However, let's look at this for a second. Let's learn together. If we looked at the triad of the brain, no, I don't believe so. I don't think either one. I think you see a little bit of both in each area of the brain. So I don't think the size are representative, though that may be an interesting find. By the way, things like that, not necessarily that you discovered that, but who knows, maybe you just did. You should write a book and that'll be wonderful. That's how the Enneagram has continued to unpack over the last couple of decades. People keep finding one little element and they go, wow, this is really important. And they unpack it to a whole another layer. This is why I say the Enneagram is one of the most complex things about the human body when it comes to personality that's ever been created, because it keeps unpacking. Remember, I told you this book that we were using just as our foundation, this book just came out not too long ago. So you have another in the layer of all of the things that people have discovered. What's more important, I think, is the most important thing, is that a lot more Christians and Christian leaders are leaning into the Enneagram, because what it's doing is what I've been telling you since the day we started meeting. It's helping us to see stuff that God implanted in us that we may not realize if we don't take a minute to investigate. But here's the big thing. I was reading some of these as I was putting them down. There's a lot of stuff in here that I want to be. Did anybody get that feeling? Well, like, I'd like to be more like that. That sounds great, but that's not me. Oh, man, I'm over here just fighting everyone all the time. Doesn't make any sense. This is exactly the point. We want to see the things that we're missing so that we can develop those areas of our life. You have to be. Listen, if you are going to fulfill the mission that God has called you to do, which there's no doubt He's placed you on this earth to do something, you have got to figure out, one, what He's called you to do. And one of the ways to do that is to figure out the way that He has wired you. When you begin to understand that about yourself, it really helps. Imagine, okay, I don't know, sometimes I'm a little over the top and you wish I didn't drink coffee and all that good stuff, but imagine if I was just up here and just, all right, guys, today I want to talk to you about the 18 wing relationships. We'll be able to, excuse me, ma'am, could you not interrupt me while I'm speaking? You'll be able to notice as you focus on the idealist that there are some qualities you may have that are similar to your peers. And this actually takes a lot less energy. I'm kind of digging it. Y'all tracking with me? No. You know what happens? It's funny. I can't help it. I try. There are sometimes, there was one time I was sick all night. Just had some kind of food poisoning, whatever. I was throwing up. Oh, sorry, too much information. But all night long. I did not sleep hardly at all. And I show up to church. It was Sunday the next morning. I show up to church and I'm not supposed to teach. I'm good, feeling good. I just got to survive, right? Say hi to you all, pretend like I love you, and just get through the morning so I can get home and go to sleep. And Chris in our office calls and he goes, hey man, someone in the senior adult class can't make it. We need you to sub. And I was like, there's literally no other day that's worse than this day right now to ask this question. It's like, I'm really sorry, but I think we need you to do it. It's like, all right. So I got up there. I had not even prepared. I didn't even know what the message was. I literally got up. I looked at it quickly and I said, okay, let's do this. So I get up and I'm telling myself the whole time, don't be you. Just stay calm. Stand still. They're an older crowd. They're not going to mind. Just speak softly. They're going to be scared anyway. If you raise your voice, just be calm. And I got started and I literally was like this and I was just kind of sharing. I'm telling you, 5 minutes in, The instinct just took over. Boom, just doing my normal thing, going crazy, loud, obnoxious, all the annoying stuff that happens. And these people are going, oh, this is great, yeah. And I came down there like, that was one of the better messages I've heard in a long time. I'm like, man, I don't even know what to do. Why? Because listen, guys, this stuff is deeper than just the elements you and I understand, right? God has put things in you that you may not even know yet. And if you don't know it, how is he going to use it? Now, it's possible because God can do anything, all right? He'll leave an empty spot in your chair where he left you, all right? He can do whatever he wants. But the reality is, if God took the time to design you, see, we spend so much time thinking about the things we don't have or the things that are wrong with us. We don't spend enough time thinking about all the intricacies he put inside of us. If we would spend even a few more minutes trying to understand the person that God has created you to be, I'm telling you, what opens up is endless. And some of this stuff you're not going to be able to run from. That's the beauty of it. But there's other things that we need to be better at. If I just ran people over all the time because I'm a challenger and I'm a leader and da-da, what kind of person would I be? I'd be a person that causes more problems than he is helpful. You think that's how God created me to be? Problematic? Not helpful? No. So God gave me a bent, but I've got to work on bringing up the rest. This is what it's all about. One other way you could think about this, have you ever seen a density map before? Ever seen a density map where you're showing a population of an area, right? So if you look at the density map of Texas, down where Houston and then where Dallas are, there's so many dots, it almost looks like the sun, right? It's just one solid color. But then as you span out further away from the major cities in Texas, you see fewer and fewer dots, fewer and fewer dots, almost where there's barely any dots. How we need to think about our personality and elements of our life, even on a spiritual level, is kind of like a density map. The places that are full and vibrant, these are the natural areas. But the things that are going to help you take that next step in whatever God's called you to do, these are the areas that have less color. Less, they could even be calm, dark, and even isolated in your life. It's very possible you've been operating in your number, maybe even in your wing, but you've been neglecting the, if you will, the bear mentality. And you've been neglecting that. And God's getting ready to do something with you on whatever the next phase is of your life. And if you don't understand this part of who you are, it's going to be really difficult for him to bring you into that full place. Some of you are raising kids. Maybe you're being a little too much of the, I don't know, I'm going to stop there so we don't get in trouble. Maybe there's areas of even your parenting that need to be discovered. Some of you are navigating through school, getting ready for the next phase of your life. You're doing it on the few things that have been easily found in who you are, and yet not realizing there's a whole area of your life that may be doormat that God wants you to investigate. How do we know he wants that? Because he gave it to you. If he didn't give it to you, he wouldn't want you to explore it. So we talk about becoming the full version of ourselves. This is what it looks like. Now, you know, one other thing I think is important, and I'm going to go ahead and just pause there so we don't cover any more of the Enneagram for a minute. I want you to think about your life in this way. If you only had, let's say, 1 year left to live. I don't want to be dark and dormant, but let's just talk for a minute. You have 1 year left to live. What are you going to do? You're going to travel. What are you going to do? Okay, let's say you had 10 years left to live. What are you going to do? You still traveling?
No.
But part of it. Which part? The front half or the back half? Think about that. Let's say you have 20 years left to live. What are you going to do? How different are the 20 from the 1?
Maybe I'd help out a little bit more.
Oh. So we just need to dial back your life to 1 year and we can get the most out of you. Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're saying?
More than 1 year, but the 1 year, I was like, I'm in trouble.
Okay. Why in the world would I say some crazy and very dark thing like that? Because listen, guys, this is how most of us live our life. We are looking at our life as if we have an eternity left. And I hate to break it to you, but regardless how old you are in this room, that's not true. And I don't want to crush your traveling plans because I think travel's great. Okay, don't leave here and be like, this guy just crushed any kind of vacation. But But I want to be honest with you. If you believe that God placed you on this earth to do something, there should be a healthy but a driven urgency to not only figure it out, but to accomplish it. I told y'all last week, we talked a little bit about the American church and Christianity and how challenging of a time we are and how we-centered, me-centered we are. Another layer of this is how you and I use our life. See, what happens is we put our life in our own terms and on our own time frame. Okay? I work with a lot of young couples right now. Too much going on with kids. Real hard to do anything else, you know, to serve or to be part of this. I'll get back to you, Chad, when our kids grow up a little bit. Totally understand that as the parent of young kids myself. I get it. I'd love to say, hit me back in 18 years and I'm all yours. That'd be amazing. But what if I'm not here in 18 years? More importantly, if I stood in front, if you stood in front of God right now, let's say you passed away, the Lord came back, whichever one came, and he asked you, what did you do with this life that I gave you? What would that conversation be like? How would it go? Now, hear this carefully. I feel it's appropriate to say this now because we are, I think, as you said, 11 weeks in. This is not a, man, you need to step it up because you're dropping the ball. Not at all. What I want you to do is to think about all the intricacies in the weeks before that you've been learning about yourself. Do you think it's an accident? You think that it's an accident that God put all of this stuff in you that left certain areas dormant, but then certain areas that are thriving? Do you think it's an accident that when you were growing up, you experienced things that literally altered the way you see and view the world, literally altered the way you respond to stressful situations? Do you think it was an accident? See, God has been intertwining every detail of your life. Now, let's be honest. Some of it was our bad mistakes. And yet God's still been taking it and using it and molding us and shaping us. Some of it were things that happened to you that you had no control over. Some of it was something in the middle. Maybe it was a little bit of you, and maybe it was a little bit of somebody else or somebody's else. The reality is God has been doing something with you. What's happening today is too many of us are comfortable pursuing our own thing. And one of the major ways we do that is we stop thinking about time as a tool. Listen, God gave you your life, and he will take it back as fast and whenever he wants. I pray long life for all of us. I think that'd be wonderful. But some of us may operate differently if we start thinking about the time we have left in our life in a new light. God is doing something special in your life. How do we know that? Because you're still here. You're still breathing. God's still working on you. If your kids are young age, you're working. If your kids are a little bit older, you're still working. If it's just you and your spouse at home, you're working. If you're single getting ready for the next phase of life, you're still working. God is doing something in your life. And sometimes I think we spend too much time trying to wonder, man, where's God? What's he doing up there? Why haven't all those things that I wanted to come together yet? Instead of looking inside and going, oh my goodness, what an unbelievable gift God's given me just in myself, that I'm here, I'm alive, I can function, I can see, I can hear. For most of us in this room, I believe I have already found the Lord. I am walking with Jesus. He is showing me my purpose and call. Man, that should drive you and I outward to be a part of the story of God. So, I say all that to tell you this. I do have some bad news that I hate to break it to you. The bad news is this class, which has been awesome, is going to come to a close in a couple weeks. And the reason is because we've had some adjustments on our staff. Someone that we know and love dearly, Candace, is stepping down from her role here at our church and moving on to bigger, better, greater things that the Lord's called her to. And so I'm going to be stepping back in, at least for the time being, as our college young singles pastor, which means we've got to really navigate how we're going to look at my schedule and all the things that I'm doing here in this church as I continue to serve our married adults and all of that. So one of the conversations that we had was that we felt like this was one of the classes that we may need to just table for now so that I could put the time and energy into this new ministry that will be added on top of my role. Now, I want to tell you something. I'm sad to say that to you, I really am, but I don't think we don't need to get all crazy about it. It is what it is. Things happen, things change. But I got to tell you something, the hardest part for me in thinking about that was how much I've been learning in this time. And so what I really wanted to do, and we're not done, we've got a couple more weeks, we're going to keep going, we've got some really cool stuff at the end, but what I wanted to try to show you today is I want you to have a passion to continue learning about these kinds of things. It doesn't have to be about brain science. It doesn't even have to be all about you, right? We talked about that last week. It doesn't need to be all about you. But I want you to have a passion to want to discover what God wants to do with you. This little season is just another picture. Let me tell you the story. This is how crazy the story is. It's kind of fun. Some of y'all are in here right now. The story is this. I did college and young singles for 10 years of my life. And then I was asked to step away and take on a new ministry in young married adults. And it was amazing and I loved it and it was so great. And so I tabled one chapter of my life. I closed it down. I wrapped it up. I shipped it off. Apparently I did use the wrong shipping company because it came back. But that was a joke. I shipped it off and I thought, man, great. I missed it, but happy because, man, new season ahead. Get to try new things. Get rolling a couple years in. Then all of a sudden through strange circumstances, the Lord brings it back. And you go, well, this is not mad. This is interesting. Thought this season was over. You ever had something like that? I thought this season was over, Lord. Oh, I thought the trial that I went through before, I thought it was over. I didn't think I was going to have to go through that again. But here we are. Not that it's a trial, by the way. Hear that clearly. But I'm just giving you an example you may better understand. So what I'm telling you is we continue to discover about ourselves because we truly never know what the Lord's going to call you and I to do. And we want to be ready. And I don't want to just be ready. I don't want you to just be ready. I want you to be the most effective you can possibly be in the season that you are in. And that's what this has been about. So we will have done, I guess, 13 weeks when it's all said and done. We've learned so many things about the brain, about ourselves, about our quiet times. We've learned about faith. We've learned about God. We've learned how intricacies work together. We've learned that we are more complex than you and I can even comprehend because there's been a few moments that even I was lost. I mean, let's be honest. It's amazing what God has been showing, but there's a reason He's been showing it to you and showing it to me, and it is to be used. And that's my hope and prayer for you, is to be used.